Welcome to Local Matters, the radio show about all things affecting Central Kentucky with Alan Stein and Skip Elliott. Brought to you by Citizens Commerce. Switch one time for a lifetime.
Welcome into Local Matters, the presentation of LM Communications brought to you by Citizens Commerce Bank. Switch one time for a lifetime. I'm Skip Elliott with Alan Stein. Hi, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Skip. How are you?
We're doing great. Today, we're happy to have 6th District Congressman Andy Barr with us.
Good morning, Congressman. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Good morning, Alan and Skip. Thanks for having me on the program.
So how are things in Washington this morning?
Well, they're good. We had a very important hearing yesterday in the House Financial Services Committee. The new chairman of the Federal Reserve System, the Federal Reserve Board, Jay Powell,
right,
came and testified on the semi-annual report, the Humphrey Hawkins hearing, reporting on the state of the economy and the trajectory of monetary policy in the United States.
Congressman, I know you're deeply involved and one of the most knowledgeable on our banking and financial systems. Do you know him?
I know him well, and of course he has been a member of the Board of Governors since 2012, and more recently he was working and kind of former chair Janet Yellen's point person on the Fed's supervisory responsibilities. Of course, President Trump nominated him to be the chair of the board, and he has assumed those responsibilities as of early February. He and I have had numerous conversations, both in hearings, public hearings, and also privately about the state of the economy and about the conduct of monetary policy, and I'm very impressed. He's a steady hand. He has a tremendous background. He's a highly educated person. He's a banker, which is somewhat different than what we've seen recently.
True.
In Fed chairs. Many of the Fed chairs recently economists. It's nice to have a banker with some real private sector experience.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing how that all plays out. We're always hopeful with new persons in positions of authority. So this should be equally good for us. We're looking forward to it.
He has a tough task ahead of him.
He sure does.
Because he is inheriting an unprecedented, unconventional monetary policy over the last decade that really is unprecedented in the history of central banking. He's inheriting a $4.5 trillion balance sheet. And, of course, we've seen a protracted period of ultra-low, super artificial interest rates. And so he has the task of normalizing monetary policy, unwinding that balance sheet, gradually and predictably raising the Fed funds rate, the interest rates, without disrupting markets. And that, I think that is a difficult task. And you've seen the volatility in the market recently. I think that's kind of a natural reaction and not altogether unhealthy reaction to the normalization that needs to happen to remove some of the distortions that are in our economy.
That helps us segue into our conversation about the how the markets impact real estate, why real estate is important as an economic factor, particularly here in Central Kentucky. We'd like to hear your thoughts about that. Why is this discussion of real estate and the markets so important?
Well, real estate, as you know, Alan and Skip, is a huge part of our economy, and it can be a very positive impact on the economy, but then when there is a downturn in housing, as we saw in the financial crisis, it can have serious negative consequences to our economy. So it's really critical that we have a sustainable, growing real estate market in this country, both residential and commercial real estate, but it needs to be a sustainable growth in housing, not a market that it rests on bubbles. It needs to be a sustainable growth. And I think that's why it's important that we have a monetary policy, a sustainable monetary policy as well, so that we have gradual return to market-based interest rates so that we don't see another asset bubble in real estate. At the same time, we want to encourage reforms in both the regulatory system and the tax system. Some of those reforms have already taken place, which will produce steady and positive growth in both the residential and commercial real estate sectors.
So what makes for a good market? How, you know, I guess the question is, what makes for a good market, and how does that translate into benefit for our communities?
Well, what makes for a good market is robust, sustainable economic growth. And Fed Chair Powell yesterday did have a lot of positive things about the economic outlook. He praised and credited the fiscal stimulus that has been unleashed into the private economy, the regulatory relief, and the tax cuts for producing more productivity, more growth, higher consumer and business confidence. And you're seeing that also putting upward pressure on wages and household incomes. That was the testimony that we heard from Chairman Powell yesterday. That is positive for housing. That is positive for real estate, because when there is consumer confidence, when there is growth, when people are able to keep more of what they earn, then they're going to invest in real estate. At the same time, we have some work to do in the regulatory space. Many community banks, many credit unions in central and eastern Kentucky, in our congressional district and around the country, continue to talk about how the pendulum swung too far in the opposite direction. Obviously, we had a situation in the run-up to the financial crisis where there was too much originating of subprime mortgages, and there were too many homeowners that did not have the ability to repay those loans. But the regulatory environment became overly restrictive in the aftermath of the financial crisis, and one of the solutions that we've offered to responsibly expand access to mortgage credit is a bill that I've introduced that is a priority of the Kentucky Bankers Association, a priority of the Kentucky Credit Union League, that would allow the community banks and credit unions with a personal relationship with a borrower to portfolio mortgages that may not fit into the one-size-fits-all credit box under the so-called qualified mortgage rule, which is a Dodd-Frank regulation that has come out of Washington and has led to the constraint of mortgage credit. And there are many creditworthy borrowers that should be able to borrow and take out a home loan and have that bank or that lender portfolio that loan, retain the risk based on the creditworthiness or the credit history of that borrower. And if the lender takes on 100% of the downside risk of default, they're going to properly underwrite that loan. It's not going to replicate some of the practices that led to the financial crisis, the so-called originate-to-distribute model, which led to the subprime meltdown. So we think this is a way to expand mortgage credit, improve the health of the real estate marketplace, but do so in a responsible way, in a way that does not risk what we saw in the run-up to the financial crisis. That bill, by the way, passed out of the House Financial Services Committee on a unanimous bipartisan vote. Yeah. We were able to work with Democrats to amend the bill to address some of their concerns. And an equivalent version of that is in a bipartisan Senate bill as well. We're very optimistic that that reform, that regulatory relief, will pass later this spring and end up on the president's desk.
Let's talk a little bit about the tax cuts that have just jumped in everybody's world. This has really helped out a lot of people. Is this helping the housing market as well?
Absolutely, and we anticipate strong improvements in all sectors of the economy. We're already starting to see the positive benefits of tax cuts in the form of raises and bonuses. Over 4 million American workers have already seen over $3 billion in bonuses and raises announced from employers throughout the country in just 8 weeks since the enactment of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So not only did we lower rates, individual rates, at every level, we also doubled the standard deduction, we doubled the child tax credit, and we made our corporate tax system much more competitive. We had a very non-competitive corporate tax system that was pushing jobs overseas. It was preventing overseas earnings from being repatriated. We're seeing a reversal of that. We've seen announcements from companies like Apple, AT&T, Comcast, Fifth Third Bank, Humana, PNC Bank, UPS, Walmart. All of these bonuses, raises, increased 401k contributions, improved benefits. And again, this is generating tremendous confidence and business optimism, and that means that people feel more comfortable in buying a home or expanding a home. And I'll give you an example. We had a tax roundtable in Richmond, Kentucky, and there was a mid-level employee of a manufacturing facility in Berea, and she went to her CPA, and they looked at how much money they would be saving. She and her husband, a two-income-earning family, middle-income family, they have a home, but their two kids share a bedroom because it's not a big home. But because of the additional income that they're going to be saving, and because their paycheck is getting bigger, they made a decision to buy a new home with two bedrooms for both of their kids. We think that is the kind of impact this will have in terms of spurring additional home purchases and the willingness of consumers, the willingness of households to make investments in real estate.
I think that's absolutely going to happen, but some would fear that it's going to happen in too robust a way, that perhaps the housing market particularly, but the economy overall might become overheated, and we would see that manifest perhaps in some inflation. Any thoughts about that?
Yes. Chairman Powell yesterday did indicate that he anticipates, because of the growth produced by the tax cuts and the regulatory relief, the fiscal stimulus, that they do anticipate prices to go up, inflation to increase. But he also indicated that, and by the way, inflation is still relatively muted right now. It's still below the Fed's 2% target. Chairman Powell indicated yesterday in our hearing that he did anticipate, because of the growth, that he indicated that inflation might move up to that 2% target, but then stabilize around 2%. So we didn't anticipate unhealthy inflation. But it's also a reason why it's important that the Fed normalize monetary policy, both in terms of unwinding the balance sheet and also gradually and predictably raising interest rates to prevent asset bubbles. So this is exactly the right policy. Removing the monetary accommodation as we grow, so as to prevent overheating and to prevent asset bubbles from materializing.
So we might say the policy is slow but steady as she goes.
That's right. We want growth, but we want sustainable growth. We don't want to create asset bubbles or any kind of dysfunction in the economy with excessive inflation. So I think we've got the right policy mix, both in terms of fiscal policy, where we have a pro-growth, lower tax, less regulatory environment that is producing growth, but also a Fed that recognizes that with that growth, we need to gradually raise interest rates, normalize rates, interest rates, return to market-based interest rates, and gradually unwind this balance sheet, which creates distortions and risk. Let's remove that risk from the system while we continue to promote pro-growth fiscal policy.
This is Local Matters, a presentation of LM Communications brought to you by Citizens Commerce Bank. Switch once for a lifetime. And we're with Kentucky's 6th District Congressman, Andy Barr. Mr. Barr, let's talk a little bit about the urban services boundary here in Lexington. Some people want to leave it where it is. Some would like to expand it. What is the urban service boundary, and why do we use it?
Well, the urban service boundary, of course, is a local ordinance, local law that was created to promote smart growth, if you will. And it was a decision that the urban county government has made over the years, and there's a procedure for making adjustments to that based on growth projections and development needs. We've got a unique community, and one of the great assets of Central Kentucky is our unique factory floor, and that is our horse farms. That's our agricultural sector. And so, you know, proper zoning and planning is important to preserve that diverse economy. Infill and redevelopment is always important. Growth is important. When you talk about real estate, one of the things that we hear about quite frequently a frustration, really, from commercial real estate brokers is the challenge that we have in terms of availability of industrial property. That is the tension that I think we have in Central Kentucky is managing our growth, meeting the demand for industrial and commercial property while at the same time recognizing and preserving our unique equine heritage. So managed growth is important, and I think obviously these are local decisions. Zoning decisions are typically local decisions, but I appreciate the balance that we need to strike there.
Well, of course, the discussion here in Central Kentucky, in Lexington and Fayette County particularly, has been about the do we grow, how do we grow, how do we sustain our growth while adding job opportunities that translate into funding in the local government through payroll taxes. But it does have a federal aspect to it. One of the key components, Congressman, of our urban services boundary and our growth philosophies and strategies has to do with PDR, the Protection of Development Rights Program. And as you know, that is largely funded not just from local authorities, but also from the federal authorities and the federal budget. And so we wonder, as we see the new federal budgets coming down, is that program from the federal level, the matching funds, still going to be available to us?
They will, and there's both the authorization for the conservation easements from the Farm Bill, and then there's appropriations to support it. I don't anticipate many changes to that. Organizations like the Bluegrass Conservancy and some of the land preservation groups often ask us what's going to happen with the Farm Bill and the authority for these conservation federal conservation easements. There's a conservation title in the Farm Bill, and I've had conversations with the chairman of the Agriculture Committee as they prepare the Farm Bill. From what Chairman Conaway, who's the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, is telling me, he doesn't anticipate any major changes to that as we reauthorize the Farm Bill this year. So I think that you're going to have kind of a continuation of the existing policy on that regard. Let me also say, though, for those interested in greater development opportunities and obviously meeting the demand for more industrial and commercial space in Central Kentucky, there is a demand for that. There is a need for that. And so while we preserve our horse farms and while we preserve our agricultural economy, we also need to find new opportunities for development for industrial space in order for us to continue to grow. One advantage that we do have is that we have outside of the horse farm areas, we have these wonderful communities like Winchester and Georgetown and Nicholasville that do have the opportunity to accommodate growth. So it's not just about Fayette County. It's not just about Lexington. We see tremendous growth, for example, in Scott County. Toyota is a big driver of that. But there is opportunity for growth in industrial and commercial real estate in those communities outside and beyond the horse farms.
And you would be an advocate on our behalf, of course, as those budget deliberations continue, to keep those funds coming to Central Kentucky so that we can maintain our unique brand, if you will.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've been a strong proponent of those funds, and I've advocated with Chairman Conaway the preservation of those conservation funds because, again, I think they've really helped us preserve the unique character of our community. What I love, and I know you do too, Alan, I love when people come to Kentucky and they tour the bourbon distilleries, or they go to Keeneland and they say, wow, I never knew that this was Kentucky. This is a great place. And it's always fun to bring people from around the country to showcase the culture, the horse culture that we have, the bourbon culture that we have. It promotes tourism, and it certainly is a driver of our economy.
And you know
and
that
it makes it a wonderful place to live because it's so beautiful.
That's our brand, and You must hear it all the time as you travel around the country.
Well, I love being, I mean, it is a real privilege and responsibility to be the congressman representing the horse capital of the world. And I'm also a member of the Congressional Bourbon Caucus. I'm a co-chairman of the Congressional Horse Caucus. And these are bipartisan caucuses. You know, people talk about the polarization in Washington and too much partisanship. That's the good thing is that the Bourbon Caucus and the Horse Caucus are very bipartisan caucuses.
Well, I think we all agree that bourbon can be the elixir to all our problems. No question.
That's right.
And I came from Ocala, Florida, which is they claim to be the horse capital of the world. They don't do anything like us for marketing. That's for darn sure.
No, they don't. Congressman Yoho from that area in Florida is a friend of mine, and I remind him that it's our yearlings that we often take down to the Ocala sales, and we drive their economy. A lot of our constituents go down there in the wintertime, and then my Democrat co-chair of the Congressional Horse Caucus, Paul Tonko, he and I have worked on some horse racing integrity reform, and he represents Saratoga Springs, and I always remind him that. It seems like half of my constituents are up in Saratoga in August for the horse sales and the races up there.
Well, with good reason. It's beautiful up there. It's not Keeneland, but Saratoga's pretty close.
It is.
Let's look a little bit into the future. What's coming up? What's on the horizon that could affect the real estate market in Lexington and in the Bluegrass area?
Well, I think this regulatory relief, this community financial institutions regulatory relief effort, this bipartisan bill that's moving through the Senate, and we've already passed numerous bipartisan bills out of the House. I think there's a real opportunity this spring to get a bill on the president's desk that includes portfolio lending reforms that, like I said, expands access to mortgage credit, that also provides relief to community banks and other lenders on the Home Mortgage Disclosure Act disclosures. I think that's very important for community banks. It's important to tailor regulations so that the same level of data collection that is imposed on large Wall Street banks is not the same requirements that are imposed on small community banks that are really at the core of real estate finance. So we are working on that. I would also add there's a bill that I passed out of the House with a strong bipartisan support. I've worked with Congresswoman Kyrsten Sinema, a Democrat from Arizona, on this bill. She also serves on the Financial Services Committee, to expand access to financing for manufactured housing. You know, in rural America, manufactured housing is a great way for many rural Kentuckians and other rural Americans to realize the dream of home ownership. And unfortunately, some of the overregulation has constrained access to financing for manufactured homes. So we've worked on that part of the real estate market as well. And let me also add, the tax cuts bill have been a big topic of discussion among the realtors and the real estate industry. And some were very concerned at the outset of the tax cuts discussion that there would be an over-aggressive limitation on the home mortgage interest deduction. I think the real estate industry made out pretty well on that front. Obviously, with the doubling of the standard deduction, there will be fewer people who itemize and take advantage of the mortgage interest deduction. But we preserved the deduction on mortgage debt up to $750,000 for new loans, and all the current loans are grandfathered in at $1 million. So that is the vast majority of mortgages in this country. And there was some concern about the deductibility of interest on home equity debt, but the way we structured the tax cut bill, interest is still deductible on home equity loans if the proceeds are used to improve the residence. And that's the reason why most people do take out a home equity loan. So I think at the end of the day, the real estate sector made out very, very well in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act.
Congressman, we really appreciate you taking time to be with us today. Your insights, of course, are always spot on and relative to the local matters that we're discussing. So I want to say thank you and look forward to seeing you soon.
Alan Skip, thanks a lot. I appreciate the opportunity. Look forward to seeing you all soon as well. And looking forward to the upcoming Keeneland meet. We'll see you out there.
Don't forget, we're only a few days from opening day, too.
Oh, that's right. We got to go to the Legends as well.
Right.
Kentucky 6th District Congressman Andy Barr on this week's Local Matters, brought to you by Citizens Commerce Bank. Switch one time for a lifetime. Join us next time on Local Matters.
You've been listening to Local Matters, the radio show about all things affecting Central Kentucky, brought to you by Citizens Commerce. Switch one time for a lifetime. The views expressed in this podcast are not necessarily the views of LM Communications Broadcast Media Group affiliates or sponsors.